Today on Talk About That, John tries to explain why his Christmas tree is already up, and I get taller but still can't dunk a basketball. Then we discuss our eavesdropping devices and online shopping compulsions. Plus a conversation about American exceptionalism and why our built-in biases give us a sense of comfort. Today's episode is not sponsored by Honey. Delicious and nutritious. Also, bee vomit. Let's do it.
Well, it's Monday again, and here we are, Johnny and John, another episode of your favorite podcast.
I thought it was John and Johnny. I always put myself second.
You know what? You are so humble. It's hard to measure your humility.
When you call attention to it, doesn't that negate the humility?
Right. Like this whole time, I've been being humble is what you were saying. And yeah.
I've not really been saying it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it matters to me if it's John or Johnny. I mean, it was my idea to start the podcast, and reluctantly you came
on
board.
You do a lot more work with it than I do.
Well,
I don't think that it would happen without you. I'm being very honest with you.
You know what? When you number one, you're on here and you're the best part of the podcast. Johnny.
Oh, John.
So I mean, let's be honest.
You don't need to say that.
And then if it was just me on here, imagine. It would be a weird podcast.
It actually was just you a second ago when we were doing the sound test. I was like, we did check one, check two. And then I said, check one, check two. And when you played it back, it was just you. And I was like, have I been dead the whole time? It was like Bruce Willis' Sixth Sense kind of a moment.
Yeah.
It's like a vampire not being able to see himself in the mirror. It's like, I'm a vampire.
To Jeffrey and all of my tech friends out there are like, get the new computer. You got to get the new computer. You got to stay up on yours.
That is such a dead-on impression of Jeffrey.
Just like Jeffrey sitting right here. Yeah. You're such a boomer. Well, I got a new computer.
Yeah.
And the GarageBand that we use crashes all the time in it. I've done nothing. Like, it doesn't work like the old one did. And I'm very upset about it. And this, and I'm at Michael Scott right now. I would drive this car into the lake
right,
in order to spite technology. That's what I feel like.
Technology is a problem.
So, but
it's also terrific. But I think that's one of the hallmark subjects of our podcast is that we hate technology and we celebrate technology at every turn.
I was telling someone yesterday in a marketing meeting that I really think a lot of my issues with technology / social media, all those things, goes back to our generation, to me being a Xennial, which was I have an analog childhood and a digital adulthood. And
it's disorienting.
It's disorienting. It gives me also, like, I think strengths in both areas.
Yeah.
Because unlike some generations before me who won't even access the digital
side, they choose not to adapt at all.
Right. Like, I have access to it, and I kind of hate it, too. You know what I'm saying? Like, I still long for the analog stuff. So, I don't hate. Hate's a strong word. Loathe. Loathe is a... No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I just don't like the expectations of it. Like, I don't like the... I think if you remove expectations, I'm good, you know. But the idea... And that's what I told them. They're like, so you have a little baby, and I see you post these amazing posts,
right?
Where this thing happened, and then you found time to take the picture or the video from the thing that happened, and spent whatever amount of time writing this really amazing post, and you put it in your stories, and you put all these different little, you know, cool fonts and different things around with music playing behind it, and I'm like, that would have taken me another 25 minutes, of the life experience with the baby that I'm not experiencing.
Yeah, but that's just something you tell yourself because you don't want to do the technology things. So you're like, this person's throwing their life away trying to... Meanwhile, I'm out there really living.
What she said to me was, it doesn't take 25 minutes.
Right, it doesn't.
She's like, you're an idiot.
Exactly. Like, you were totally wrong.
It was like, here's the thing. I'm not bad at technology. Technology doesn't always work for me. And I know everyone's going to think that's user error. But to me, that's a gross stereotype. Like, is it not possible that... It really doesn't work for me sometimes.
Maybe. By the way, that's one of the things about our language. We talk about this sometimes, how like we misremember or things morph, colloquialisms morph, and we think they mean one thing, but really they mean another thing.
Right.
Like somebody was saying about Robert Frost, his poem about two roads diverge into the woods, and I took the one less traveled by, and it's made all the difference.
Yeah.
That he was saying, like, I took the hardest path. And that's what that really means is, like, don't take the easy path. Go the wild way and take the unproven way. And that's how you have a remarkable life. And that's not what he meant at all. Like, there's a whole, like, article I read one time, but, like, that's not at all what he meant. Like, he was basically totally for the easy path.
It's like, I made bad decisions, and it's made me a better person, but...
Yeah, exactly. So, but one I think about a lot is, to your point about the thing about Instagram and technology, and you convince yourself, like, well, I don't have time for that anyway, or that I probably... You have, like, almost a sense of superiority that develops. But, like, that is what sour grapes actually is. Like, the Aesop's fable where sour grapes, the phrase sour grapes came from, is about this animal that can't reach grapes at the top of a tree. So he convinces himself, well, they're probably sour anyway, to make himself feel better. We think of sour grapes as like something bad happened and you were like, you feel sour about it.
Right.
Like that's how it's more.
He never tasted the grapes.
He never tasted the grapes.
And they were delicious.
Right. But yep. He convinced himself, well, it's probably crap anyway. And I'm better than, you know, it's like it's to protect yourself from the pain of not experiencing something.
Yeah.
That's what sour grapes really is.
I feel like I've tasted social media.
Yeah.
I've tasted Instagram. And it's
been
okay.
Have you, John?
It's okay. I mean, I'd use it. I posted the other night. Like you said, I posted my daughter having a jump serve.
It was great.
Yeah.
Sadie's, man, she can get up there.
She's jumping.
How tall do you think she's going to be?
I don't know. We're a little worried.
Because girls have the big growth spurt and then they stop.
Right. We're worried that she's slowing down.
Okay.
So.
Why would that be a worry?
Because we can't accept her.
You want, unless she's 7 foot tall.
No, we don't care. But we, a lot of reasons we think, Laura's theory is that, and this is interesting, you know, that life for her might be a little easier in multiple areas with a little bit of height.
Yeah.
And
reaching things on shelves.
Right. Just those simple things, you know, longer straps in your overalls.
I will say this, I hit my head getting out of my car probably more than the average person.
So there's an example of how it doesn't benefit.
That's a bad thing.
That
I hope that she won't have to go through.
I mean, just from a pure like volleyball standpoint, and say loves volleyball. Like
volleyball's big for her.
Unless you could be a setter, or you could be a libero.
Well, this sounds very.
But she doesn't
like a Chrysler libero.
She doesn't play
convertible.
Libero is the player in the back row that's in a different color jersey.
Uh-huh.
So if you ever see that, so they're
just wandered in off the street and didn't have the
they're
right
not
proper
even on
uniform.
The team. Like they just roam. There's like
they let the goalie in soccer wear a different uniform too. There's like, yeah. You know what? Just put on a green shirt. We don't care.
Like there's just like this roaming community of liberos, and they just randomly find games.
Interesting.
And come in. Yeah,
does sounds like a very gang.
It's Hey, yo, I'm with the liberos.
They have like signs they throw up.
You know, the deal is in college. Sometimes we hear it called libero, and we think that they're pronounced. It's kind of like
you think in the South they don't want to say because it sounds like liberal. It's libero. I'm not a libero. No way.
Is it libero? Is that what they say? Or liber? I don't know what they say.
Libero.
I don't know. Laura's screaming right now.
Oh, no.
You're not a volleyball dad.
You know what? When I was watching Olympic volleyball, and I think we had a conversation about this off air, but I can't believe that there are not more broken fingers from just putting your hands up randomly and a ball just hit your finger wrong. I saw a few buddy taped hands.
Yeah.
But these girls, and especially the guys that hit it like 190 miles an hour,
gosh.
Just coming at your fingertips. It's going to hit wrong because you're just putting your hands up hoping to block.
Yep.
Sometimes it's just a very, almost just a, you don't know what's happening. So I can't believe there's not more bent back, horribly disfigured hands.
Well, and they get hit in the face a lot too when they go into that. Like we saw a girl for UT and I think either she reposted it, like she took one to the face and like they zoomed in on it. You know, that's part of it. I mean, you know, it's coming so fast, but I don't know, Johnny. It's a tough game. It's a tough game.
It is.
Watch your back, football. You know.
It is, but so Sadie will be what, 7 foot tall? You know, I thought I was going to be I thought I was going to be a big tall guy when I was. Did I ever tell you this? When I was 14.
Well, you're 6'4", right?
I'm 6'4", but when I was like 5'6" in eighth grade, I had like basically what was a huge cancer scare in my family.
Yeah.
So they thought I had leukemia. My mom didn't tell me. She was kind of afraid, and she was like, we were going down. I mean, she was taking me to different people to pray for me because I had this bone scan coming up. I had broken my ankle playing basketball, and it was kind of a clean break, but it was...
The first of many.
The first of many. I have trick ankles, but you know, mostly I have sprains, but this was a clean break, I believe. So we go to the doctor, and he had concerns about bone density, so they scheduled this bone scan. They said, this feels like he's having bone density issues that are from... bone cancer. and we need to get on. We need to rule this out. But I'm almost positive that's what this is. So my mom went through like 2 weeks of hell thinking I had bone cancer. So when they run the bone scan and the tests come back that I had all these like calcium deposits in my joints. And so, evidently that means you're getting ready to have a gigantic growth spurt. So they said, not only does he not have cancer, he's probably going to be about 6'10".
Wow.
So it was, and I found all that out on the same day.
Wow.
Like I found out that I was probably had cancer, do not have cancer, and I'm going to be gigantic. And I was 5'6", 5'7".
Wow.
Going into my ninth grade year. This was the summer of my eighth grade year. So I thought, I'm dunking basketballs flat footed from here on out.
You're so excited.
And it didn't work out.
No.
But I did grow like 6 inches over the next year.
I feel like at 6'4", you should be able to dunk a basketball.
I think you're right.
And you can't.
No. I can't. I can get rim, you know, but I just can't. I never was able to.
I can get net.
Yeah.
That's about the
distance. You can do a pull-up, get the net, pull yourself up.
Yeah. Windmill with the other hand. You know, I've always fancied myself more of an outside shooter. Not because I am.
Fancy yourself right? that. And I think a lot of basketball, when a basketball player uses the word fancied himself, that's when you know you're in for the game of your life. That guy's a real one.
There is a Division I coach that I'm friends with, basketball coach, who's pretty famous. And
why can't you say his name?
I don't want to say his name. And so
you don't want to name drop?
No,
I don't. Name drop everyone else on this show.
I'm not name dropping. This is a special relationship for me.
Because you think you're going to get free tickets.
No.
This is about what you're getting.
No, it's not about what I'm getting. I really love the guy. And so we talk about stuff. And every once in a while I'll send him this, like we'll get a new recruit or something to his team. And I'll be like, hey, listen, I want to let you know. And I told him the other day, I was like, I think that I still have some eligibility with this transfer portal stuff.
Oh, right.
Like a grad transfer.
Good to
I
know.
Can enter grad school and I could be a free throw specialist. I was like, now it's a less known, you know, a lesser known position. Yeah. But dude, put me at the free throw line.
What if they could do that? That'd be an interesting thing if you could just like do a designated
like pinch hit. Yeah.
Pinch throw.
Yeah. Put me in there, coach. You know, he didn't respond to that one.
No.
So he's joked with me before about I need to keep working out, you know, the free throws, you know, but it's like, look, I mean, but we played basketball. I think we played basketball at the rec center in Lebanon a couple years back, 3-4 years back.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I remember, I hadn't played in a long time, was how much my feet hurt afterwards because I'm used
to
running.
It's different, yeah. It's different engagement in the balls of your feet and
that
stuff.
That lateral just quick movement back and forth, you know, as quick as I am. Like, but I need to get back into it.
The last thing we played together was racquetball. We need to do that again. That's a very, like, you have to have lateral. You have to keep your head on a swivel.
See, you play racquetball all the time. So
no,
you
I don't. That's the last
me.
Time I played, too.
So I have no excuse when I
didn't destroy you, but...
Didn't I win? I think I won one game.
You won by the end because I think you were figuring it out. Because I was, like, showing you the rules and stuff the first couple of games.
Well, I used to play racquetball back in Knoxville, but it's been 20 years.
When you play for the first time in a long time, the main thing is you're going to hit the other guy in the back because you're not placing the ball
that.
Right.
That was part of my strategy. Put a big bruise on Johnny's back and he'll watch his back. Think about that. You can't really watch your back.
No.
Have you ever tried?
It's hard. You have to have eyes in the back of your head.
Wait.
You got to mix your metaphors.
I don't know. How do the cars
take the road less traveled?
How do you're gonna laugh at me?
Oh boy!
But the cars that now your car probably does this.
Okay.
You push a button.
Yes.
And you can suddenly see on the screen, like from above you.
Oh, I don't have that. The bird's eye view
around the entire car.
I don't think you can see it. I think it's like a satellite image of what.
Surely they're not satellite imaging your car every time you push that button.
It's like a cartoonic version of your car.
I've seen things where you can see, I think it's like a 360, you can see around the car what's to your right, left.
I've heard of the bird's eye view, but I didn't know it was an actual like live image. That feels a little bit creepy, Big Brother-ish.
I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Like, we know what you had for breakfast.
Well, you know, Amazon Alexa is like currently being sued because they 100% are listening to you through the hockey pucks in your house.
Well, there's no doubt they're listening.
But I mean, everybody always has said that for years. They're like, my phone is, I'll talk about, you know, aspirin, and next thing you know, I'm getting a aspirin ad. I don't know why you'd be having an aspirin.
Aspirin. It still works.
But, you know, people will say, like, I remember it really did happen to me one time. We were in a drive-thru at Taco Bell, and we were thinking about our Mexico trip that we just took. But it was like a year before that, and I was just like, I don't even know what the average temperatures are in Cancun. Like, when is a good time to go to Cancun? And then I typed in Google while we were waiting in the drive-thru.
When?
I just said average. I typed in AVE, and it said average temperatures in Cancun. And I looked at Curry and I said, look at this autofill. And it was just, it was a clear cut case that that had been, that happened to me. There's no way.
She put her phone and she typed in, look at this, and it said autofill. And it was like, oh my gosh. And then
it said, go without him. Don't take your husband to Cancun. But she did. She could not be dissuaded. But it is weird. But anyway, there's actual like litigation that's happening, I believe, where they're being censured by congressmen about this practice of targeted advertising.
What they're going to say is this all of the fine print, we give them the right to do.
Yeah, we signed up for it.
Yeah. I'm not sure it'll help in court unless you tell them to stop doing it.
It is because like we're talking about it now, but we're not like, and it has to stop.
No,
we're slowly, our privacy is being eroded and we're not that bummed out about it. We're like, yeah, but I needed a sleeping bag, and Alexa knew.
But there's a package on my front porch every day when I come home. I don't even know what all of it is.
It fills the tiny hole within me. I like it. It's, yeah.
Amazon is a, I know we know this, it has truly changed everybody's world.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times a week do you think you get Amazon packages?
I don't even want to say because it makes me sound like a horrible person. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd be afraid of the judgment. It's too many.
Yeah, it's too many for me.
When we got back from our trip, I felt like there was like a ketchup day.
They delivered ketchup.
I felt like Curry and I each ordered like three things.
Wow.
Because like we'd been off the grid for 8 days. So we were like, oh, I need this. And she bought shoes. I bought guitar strings.
Wow.
I wear my guitar strings as shoes. It's a new thing we're doing.
hurts
it does bit. Hurt yeah. Like I don't recommend it at all,
dude. I was playing worship last week and I play once a week. so on Sunday, like, my calluses are there because I play every week,
you know? Man, mine are fading.
Some weeks I may just play the opening song guitar and then I switch to piano, especially if I have a band, you know. But
you don't get calluses from piano though, do you?
You don't get calluses from piano. If you play long enough, you can get blisters.
Right, I've seen those.
In the old band days, I remember we played a long, especially outside, sweaty kind of thing.
It's all that sliding.
Yeah, I used to slide on the old B3, but I had weighted keys on that keyboard, and that'll get you. So, but there's one of those things, like Andrew came up, I was supposed to close worship, but there was a scripture he was going to read and go ahead and do it for part of his message. And do you remember this feeling? When he came up and tapped me, and I hope he listens to this, like at that moment in time, my hand was hurting so bad.
Yeah.
Because I had played the whole practice and now played the whole set. And it was all in D, which actually it wasn't in D, but there was a lot of if I play a long time in D, for some reason, it hurts worse, you know.
Yeah, it's like the grip is different.
But my calluses were killing me. And I thought, oh my gosh, how long is he going to pray? So I should be focused.
Yeah.
And it's two acoustics. So the deal is, like, if it starts buzzing, it's not like there's a band behind me or there was a pad track playing. But do your hands, when you play on the road, like, you don't play long enough for your hands?
I don't play long enough anymore. In fact, during the pandemic, when I wasn't doing hardly any shows, I feel like my calluses went away and I had to, like, re-get them.
I pick at my calluses.
Ooh. I've done that.
It's like a nervous tick.
When I first was getting calluses when I was 18, 19, learning to play the guitar, and they're just forming. Yeah, you'd get out of the shower, and there'd be like skin hanging off of your fingertips.
Nice, everybody.
Just peel it off.
Nice. Now someone's, Laura just started gagging.
I know.
You ever seen Laura gag?
Yeah. She sticks her tongue out like a lizard.
Like a little, it's very cute. It's very cute. When I gag, it sounds like someone's killing me.
Yeah.
Like if I throw up, it sounds like I'm dying.
Right. You're retching.
Yeah. And when she gags, it's like there's no noise.
Just a little tongue out.
Yeah.
It's like a little gecko.
And she also has a cute little giggle after she sneezes a lot of the time.
She giggles after she sneezes?
She's like, ah, choo.
What are you, married to Betty Boop? What is happening?
She just kind of laughs at it a little bit, you know. So like, oh, she's adorable, Johnny. 21 years this month of marriage.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. September 30th, 21 years.
Your marriage is old enough to drink.
Isn't that crazy? That's a long time.
You're like, and it's gonna.
And it's
gonna. That's the plan.
21 years, and she'll always say, like, it's one of those I do it all over again. I was like, my only regret is that I didn't do it much sooner. Like, we should have run. When I met you, I should have run to the altar. But I understand.
It was good. You had good timing.
I had a good timing of that.
Yeah. There was a great thing I saw the other day, and it was one of those signs that you see that's all cursive and people put in their house. But it said, I love you more today than yesterday. And then at the bottom it says, yesterday you were kind of annoying. I think it's just such a funny play on that.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're just past
26.
Man.
Yeah. Doing it, man.
Doesn't seem like a day over 25 to me.
It's great. It's great. And yeah. My wife doesn't laugh after she
sneezes
or anything.
You can't have everything, Johnny.
Yeah, evidently not. I didn't know that was even an option out there. It's like a horrible disease, it turns out. Yeah, that's... She needs to have that checked. That's
sneezolaphophonia or whatever. I saw, by the way, I was uploading another video of Sadie's birth from...
Whoa, hold on.
Not her actual birth, but the day of her birth.
And you weren't one of those people just like zooming in and making a gross spectacle of yourself. No.
And you were there. We were looking at Sadie in the nursery, and I was inside and stuff. And at some point in time,
out the window, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
At some point in time, in one of those videos, you said, "I remember an old joke." you were saying it. Laura used to say, "If someone had a lazy eye, of course, she finished nursing school. It's not a lazy eye; it's a condition called amblyopia." And you just thought that was the funniest thing.
Well, no, she made a distinction. Here's how it started: our bass player was single, and we were trying to set him up with somebody. And somebody at the college group that we were doing worship in said, "I've got this perfect girl for you. Now she's got a lazy eye." That's how it was one of those things of like. And then Laura said, "Is it a lazy eye or is it amblyopia?" And I didn't know that there were two different things. And I was just like, no. It's just an eye that won't do a lot of chores around the house. And then she got mad. She rolled her eyes. And I think she came over and hit me in the arm or something.
Probably.
But it made you laugh, which is all I was really going for.
You were still. That had to be 4 years before.
It became a running thing with Laura because anytime she would say something like nurse speak, we would go, amblyopia.
Yeah.
And then you'd be on the couch for the night.
Yeah, well, you know.
It's worth it. Some things are worth it.
Yeah. It was just funny hearing like, oh, wow, we sound exactly the same.
Yeah, we've not changed. We're just as juvenile as ever.
Oh, my goodness.
Being a father has not changed you for that. Yeah. That's good.
Had an interesting sort of ironic experience the other day. Reggie and I had to go back to the studio to punch in. So when you do your audio book, there's stuff they go and edit almost like if you're doing an album. They're like, we heard something in the background here, or we're not, we want to change this. And so we were over in the studio just punching in our changes. And Johnny, there's a part of the book where I tell my story growing up and how I was a guy who operated a weed eater. And during the moment when I'm talking about operating a weed eater, I had to re-record it. You want to know why?
Why?
Because there was a guy operating a weed eater outside the studio.
That's irony.
Guys, what are the odds of that?
Well,
literally, I was saying the word weed eater because there was a weed. We heard the weed eater in the background.
Is that why you were having to punch it in before?
No, I'm saying that was the first time we recorded it.
Oh, I see.
A guy was outside mowing. Mm-hmm. And so now it's like, oh, we heard a weed eater in the background. And when we went to record the word, I was saying the word weed eater. Now, Johnny, is that coincidence? Isn't that just like what the Lord would... It was just, I don't know, it was kind of ironic to me. I don't know. Maybe it's not as big of a deal as I thought. I mean, I kind of freaked out.
It is weird. It is a little bit weird. But, I mean, it is summer in Nashville, so there's going to be weed eating.
And the guy had just said, by the way, the day that happened, he was like, you know what I love about this place? Where the studio is, he's like, man, you don't ever hear anybody mowing, nothing around here. And immediately when he said that, somebody fired up a lawnmower weed eater, and then we recorded, and it got caught anyway. So, yeah, very interesting. So
he lied. That guy was so wrong.
Well, you... So I have books, by the way, now.
What do you mean?
Real ones. I got my author copies.
Oh, good. I'll take one with me on my trip.
I got a real one now. And
although I'm driving a lot, so it's not like I can... I wish I had an audiobook.
Well, that's the question. Are you going to read it or listen to the audiobook? I don't care. It's reading it either way.
Well, yeah.
You're not want to commit to reading it at all, do you?
I will read.
You're like, no, I don't want
to... I'm just saying, like, if I was going on a long plane trip, it'd be great to have the book. It'd have been great to have this in Cancun, John. By the way, I was listening back to the episode about Cancun, and it's so funny that I was, like, talking about how... I'm sure the listeners, that they just roll their eyes at some of our inconsistencies, because I was, like, talking about how I didn't know about doing a huge photo dump, because I thought it was, like... You know, telling people don't want to hear about your dumb trip. And then I spent like 20 minutes talking about my dumb trip. I'm such a hypocrite. It's fun. But if you listen to this show, you want to hear that. I assume you want to hear that stuff. But
yeah,
I don't know. I'm a man of many parts. I contain multitudes. Okay, John?
That you do, Johnny. Speaking of a listener, you know, I got corrected by a certain listener who sent me after...
We can receive correction around
after,
here?
Well, no, I can't.
Oh,
after
a bad example.
Our whole debate on syrup versus syrup,
oh, right.
Someone who shall remain nameless sent me an actual, like, Google pronunciation or something. I don't know what kind of crazy website she was getting it from, but yeah. It had the pronunciation.
Or you can click the thing and then Siri says it,
yeah.
Says the word.
No, it's Surrey. Right.
Oh, right.
But no, it said syrup, and they're like, it must suck to be wrong, or something like that, you know. And I just want to come out publicly and say that I don't really, like, if we say that everything the internet says is right, then what kind of people are we, Johnny?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Plus, I wonder if it dialect figures into it, and she just found some southern pronunciation of it.
What if,
like,
it's
was
been,
that like paulading.com,
right? Or what if it's been listening to her this whole time?
Oh, right. Because so she has kind of a southern accent, this person,
right? Now it gave her the pronunciation that she wanted to hear, which is what the internet is doing for a lot of us, John.
Wow.
It's telling us the narrative we want to hear. And so I would like to just publicly say that I condemn what she sent me, and I stand by it. We don't travel to Syria. We travel to Syria. We don't travel to Syria, but I'm saying if we did.
Why would you? What are you trying to say, John?
I've never been to Syria.
Oh, okay.
But I would never call it Syria.
Syria.
And so I must eat syrup, not syrup.
I think it's syrup. I think that's the emphasis is on the up.
Yeah.
You know, it's not. Yeah, syrup.
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 Or syrup.
That sounds like...
See, if you say syrup, though...
It sounds like someone getting nauseous. Syrup! It's a very...
What was the word you always said? It sounds like...
Europe, yeah. Europe, yeah. You shout Europe at the sink. Europe!
A lot of...
There's a lot of body function happening on this show. Yeah. I apologize to our very sophisticated audience, I'm sure. Very offended by this.
You were sipping your Earl Grey tea.
Yeah.
I can't believe that they did this.
I need something like that. I need that in my life. I need a very sophisticated vice.
I have Earl Grey tea bag right now.
I don't have anything. Do you?
Yeah.
You just had it handy?
Yeah. Well, Johnny, I'm ready for everything.
Wow. Is Earl Grey any good?
Earl Grey's my favorite.
He said, coughing.
I do have a little bit of
Coach, your throat.
It really helps. I do have a little bit of a, I don't know. It's raining outside today, so mm-hmm. I'm going to chalk it up.
Yeah, chalk it up.
To
chalk is what you do with wheels, like to keep
right.
the trailer.
If I was
going to
chalk it up, I would put wheels behind my chair. I'm going to chalk it up to allergies and not to a pandemic's disease.
We hope not. 1 in 500 Tennesseans now.
1 in 500 Americans.
Oh, I thought it was 1 in 500 Tennesseans.
What I saw on Washington Post
have died of COVID.
Headline.
Yeah. That's bananas.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Wow.
That's a lot. 1 in 78 Tennesseans is infected actively right now.
No.
That's the number Tennessean, I think, put out. Yeah.
Man.
So, yeah. Yeah, it's I don't know a person who doesn't know someone who's died at this point. And
right.
I think you had said early on, someone said that. It's by the end of this, everyone's going to know someone who's
died. Yeah, and it seemed crazy.
Yeah.
At the time, we all were like, whoa.
The first time I heard about this, we were at Disney. and it was March of 2020.
It was an innocent time.
And it really was an innocent time. And we were walking around with friends at Disney with our friends, the Stewarts, you know, and the kids are running around and we were standing in lines. I mean, each park has 20, 25,000 people.
Yeah.
And we were like reading these stories. And again, it's probably as close to a doubtful conspiratory mindset that I ever got. I was like, something doesn't seem like it makes sense to me. Surely, you know, and I think they'd put out hand sanitizer. Mm-hmm. That's like what they had done.
That was the closest thing to at the time, due diligence here.
Yeah. And by the time we got home, I remember sitting in the Orlando airport and it was like a ghost town.
Yeah.
Like we almost didn't make it. They canceled a bunch of flights, I think, that weekend, and things started. I mean, it took off so fast. It was just an interesting thing to think when you think back to when you first hear about something. I remember the first time I went to the store to try to find toilet paper.
Right.
And like that feeling of like weird. I think back to World War II or the Depression and when life changes, what it was like in the beginning to go looking for, you know, scrap metal in order to you know, do your bit, you know, to help the war effort. Or you think about nationwide conscription, you know, people getting called up. I mean, there's just so much to it. Factories changing over from making one thing to making war materials. It's just like, I take comfort in that. But it is interesting that I think we have an experience in our lifetime, probably multiple experiences, but we have experiences now in our lifetime that we can go, oh, yeah, I mean, obviously September 11th is one of those major experiences. I remember where I was, you know, I know how it changed the world. And I remember when this started, you know, the reactions. I mean, it's how it felt to have to start making changes. I just think it's a fascinating social observations, and maybe observations we won't process for a long time.
Yeah, it'll be a thousand mile view from it. We'll have to get the true perspective on it 2 decades from now. It'll be studied.
Oh, yeah.
And all of our reactions will be second-guessed by, you know, your kids. And grandkids, they'll be like, can you believe these people? Either we weren't careful enough or we were way too careful or whatever they think. Or we allowed government overreach or we didn't. Or we were so suspicious of government overreach that we didn't even do the thing we should have done.
Yeah,
because we're such a paranoid culture, which is where I kind of light. I light somewhere in there where, you know, we talked about that. The joke about God sends the helicopter and the boat and the whatever. And you're standing on the roof during the flood. And then you get to heaven. You're like, why didn't you rescue me? God's like, I sent the boat. And that's how I feel about it. I feel like the vaccine is a miracle. So I've done everything I can to try to normalize it to people who I know at the risk of maybe even losing them because I'm like, it's okay, but whatever. I don't know. Some people immediately probably will stop listening to the podcast the minute I said that, but that's how I feel about it.
Well, I mean, I think something I'm working on is I invite everybody to, and that is, listen, ask yourself this question. Are you ever as suspicious of yourself and your way of thinking as you are of everything else you hear?
Right.
There needs a healthy person and a healthy way of thinking, even a biblical way of thinking, because there's a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death, or a fool takes no pleasure in understanding, but only in expressing his or her opinion. These proverbs are basically saying, many are the plans in the heart of a person, but it is the Lord who establishes the steps. And the principles from all those is that, I mean, like what you're thinking may not be the best version of reality.
What is the old saying? Don't believe everything you think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if at some point in time you haven't been suspicious of your own thinking, that's a great place to start.
Or whatever your favorite talking head is.
Yes.
If you think that they're totally perfect, they never would lead you astray. Well, that can be dangerous.
I'm working on a concept of, I told someone this yesterday, I'm working on a concept of maybe even like a true process, almost like a chart, list, bubble sheets, I don't know, Venn diagram, of deconstructing like your reactionary beliefs. I'm not talking about deconstructing religious beliefs necessarily, but like if you have a deeply held belief that seems to be very suspicious of everybody and they're out to get us, like whatever that belief may be, see if you can piece together where it came from. Like, start taking a step back. Where's the first, like, you'd ask questions like, this is what you do in therapy or in inventory.
Right, sure.
Like, hey, when's the first time you remember hearing that idea?
Yeah.
Okay, who was the first person you remember hearing that idea from? And you might not be able to exactly place it.
Yeah.
But, okay, where is the most frequent place you've heard that idea?
Yeah.
What characterizes the tribe
that
perpetuates that idea the most? You know?
Well, we've talked about that before, about how our suspicions of other people, even though it seems like it'd be a really chaotic way to live, it somehow gives a lot of people peace because it justifies their feeling of dread.
Yeah.
You know, if you can convince yourself, yes, there are lizard people, it seems like a really far way to go. But if it makes you feel like, and they're out to get us, and this gives me this sense of meaning because I know the deep secret.
Right.
And I've exposed the lie or whatever that they are lizard people, and no one believes, but they're going to find, and I'm going to have this day of reckoning where I'll be proven right and they'll be proven wrong. The people who didn't believe, like, it becomes like, it gives you a sense of meaning. So even though it seems like a horrible thing, it provides peace in a way to some of the tribal thinking that we have. So, you know, when we demonize Republicans or we demonize Democrats, there's a peace that comes from it that we wouldn't otherwise able to be obtained than just be like, oh, there's just a lot of different people that believe a lot of different things. And maybe they all have okay motives. We just believe differently. Like, now we have to believe that politician wants to destroy the world just to watch it burn.
Yeah.
That's important to us. It's not just, well, he believes in more government programs than I do, and I wouldn't do that because, man, I think people should have to work for their money. It's not that. It's he wants to destroy America as we know it. Like, that's the way we have to believe now. And I think that extremism comes from, so I think it falls, we talked about this, it falls to people who believe or were raised in evangelical culture. I think we're the easiest ones to rope into that because we already have like an apocalyptic view of the future.
Yeah.
Some of us. I don't necessarily believe all of that anymore as far as like, is Revelation an allegory, et cetera. But that idea that like doom is coming, you know, trial by fire, tribulation, locust people, it's not that much of a jump to go, here's lizard people who are in the government.
Yeah.
It's not that far to get somebody to believe that. And that, you know, people want to destroy the world just because they're pure evil and you're, you know, it's a slippery slope. That's the big argument. Everything's a slippery slope now. You know, if we let them do this before you know it, you know, people are going to be marrying cattle. You're like, that's a big jump.
I don't know if
people haven't married cattle before.
Right. Yeah. I put something in the book that they took out.
About marrying cattle.
Okay. Who was the Russian boxer in Rocky IV?
Drago?
Yeah.
Ivan Drago?
You know. And then I was also thinking of the terrorist.
Yeah. Those are different.
Yeah, they're very different things.
Hopefully they're different.
Yeah. The terrorist on Air Force One, which was played by
Gary Oldman.
And if you remember, like, in both of those, there's all these talks in those old movies, that thing you're talking about, like this irrational hatred of America.
Yeah.
For no real reason, except just that you have freedom, and it's almost like a jealousy is how it was portrayed in those movies. Because we hadn't done anything wrong.
Right.
It was just because
they see our freedom and hate it.
Right. And when Gary Oldman finally gets Harrison Ford up in the cockpit after he finally catches him, after, you know, Ford's taken out, I don't know, 10 terrorists on his own, you know, just stealthily throughout the airplane. And he puts the gun up to his neck, and it's just like this, it feeds into this concept that there are those who just hate us for who we are.
Mm-hmm.
You Americans. And it's like it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy in some ways because, I mean, any nation then can behave in a way that makes people not like them. But
yeah, the people think Americans are arrogant or whatever.
Right.
I'm sure other countries do have that feeling. Yeah, and there are countries,
sure.
You know, Arab countries who are taught lies about Americans.
Yep. There's
that we're
propaganda
the great Satan, and there's propaganda, just like we have propaganda against them. That's the thing we won't examine a lot of, though, is that we have propaganda against Arab countries, too, that we're raised to believe that they're whatever. They're godless weirdos and
everyone
whatever.
Who's a Muslim is out to hurt us.
That's propaganda, too, but we don't see that. We only see the propaganda that they pitch against us. It goes both ways. But I do think that, you're right. It's it's a weird thing. And that was a big movie trope in the 80s and 90s was like, we're the good guys. Yep. And they hate us just because we're free. Jim Jefferies, who's a comedian from New Zealand or Australia, and he's had some success in America, and he kind of has a whole bit about that. He has a comedy special called Freedom, and it's spelled D-U-M-B, Freedom. And one of the signature bits in that is when he talks about, like, you Americans talk about freedom like it's like you're the only ones in the world that are free. He goes, do you know that there are 94 democratically free countries? And I think the audience had not heard this. He's in Kansas somewhere doing this special. And he's just like, 94. And he goes, do you know that you have 200% the incarceration rate of the nearest country? And it's South Africa is the next one.
Yeah.
He goes, 2% of your population is in prison. He goes, so you think you're the most free, but you have the least amount of free people per capita. It was just like this.
Wow.
So he's kind of teaching in a way. He's being funny and kind of snarky about it. But it's like, we literally do fall into that trope that, but we're the biggest megaphone in the world and we deserve it because we're the only free country. It's like, it's not true at all.
Right.
We're not the only democratically free country at all.
No.
But it's easy to think that. Or at least if we don't even believe that, we believe that we're the best at it. Our system is the best.
Yeah, the implementation of a constitutional democracy, by the founders was absolutely revolutionary at the time.
Yes.
And it remains a major...
And it was an example to some of these other countries,
sure. It has been the example.
I'm not taking away from that. I'm just saying, this idea that everyone else is just godless weirdos and their government's just chaos and it's all dictatorships except for America and maybe Canada.
Right.
That's just so not true.
Right. And I think what gets missed in the modern age is the humility in many of the founders. We act as if they had the foresight to know that this would last this long and be this example to the world. Now, they knew, and they were celebrities and certainly, almost... I guess democratic savants in many ways for their time. They took ideas that were there and they did something completely radical, revolutionary with it, and then won the war against the global superpower of the time, which there were a lot of other global things happening that caused it to happen.
I mean, you had to wonder if they thought they were going to have to keep fighting wars forever, though, to keep themselves free.
Well, this is why the United States did not enter on the side of France to pay back their favor for entering on the side of us against England, which is why we won the Revolutionary War, was because we didn't think we could handle. And this is why John Jay, negotiated a treaty. We were back on the verge of war with Britain again in the 1790s because of they had taken some of our sailors captive at sea and other things. He negotiated a peace, which they were burning him in effigy around the country because being a British sympathizer, he was still like France was our traditional ally. Britain was our enemy. And then you had the split. This is the beginning of the two-party system. The Federalists in general felt that our best economic stability was to stay in trade harmony with Britain. And the ideological, that's the Alexander Hamilton side. George Washington side, really. Then you have the Thomas Jefferson, James Madison side, the Republicans versus the Federalists, who are, of course, Jefferson has spent all these years in France as an ambassador and now wants to be loyal to France during their own bloody revolution. And there's this sense and feeling, and this is back to that humility of the founders, there's a sense among many that that kind of revolution was going to take hold that guillotines are going to be everywhere. And they're going to start, hurting people the same way it's happening in France.
Yeah.
There was this fear of that sort of radical revolution that honestly Jefferson and those guys were stoking to say this is good. That's that whole thing.
It sells papers, man. It always works.
It's
a way to get the electorate engaged.
Well,
it still happens.
Conservatives love to quote Jefferson, that the tree of liberty must be
refreshed
from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. But at the end of the day, what he was talking about was not a conservative movement. It was an ultra radical liberal revolution in France where they're killing common people and royalty.
Yeah.
And there's not, it's not due process or justice. And it's certainly not as much armies on the field of battle as our revolution was. But there is a sense, though, at that time of humility that we don't know this is going to last forever. They know it was important. But I think that maintaining that humility about who we are in history of like, hey, this is, in my opinion, the best constitutional form of government that's ever existed, certainly beforehand. I don't know how it's been. I can't tell you what the 94 others, you know, what they've done to improve. Hopefully they've continued to improve.
Right.
I mean, there's always room. But it wasn't – they looked at it and they honored it, but they made it elastic. Like with amendments in the court systems and other things, like they knew it needed to breathe because they knew the country would continue to change. And the idea there was a humility. Like if you think something's perfect, you don't give it the ability to change. Right? You just go, oh, this is exactly how it is. Like, you know, we don't add amendments to scripture. You know, if we're going to call it infallible. So we act like the Constitution, the early documents that they considered them to be, you know, whatever you consider them to be today, that's one thing. But I'm telling you what the founders consider them to be, the people who wrote them.
Living, breathing, changing documents.
Yeah, they cannot consider them infallible. And that's George Washington.
They did not consider themselves infallible as they wrote them either.
George Washington's farewell address at the end of his second term. He says, you know, that we believe that people have the right to establish and alter their constitutional systems of government. Like the idea was altering forward, but it takes humility to admit that something needs to be altered. And I just, whether this is about government or not, I think that the attitude.
What do you want to change, John? What do you want to change in the Constitution? Give me your amendment and I'll tell you whether I'd vote for it.
Hey, I'm going to tell you something. I'm glad that they had that because there's a lot of things that needed to change.
Yeah.
From a, like you, to your point about freedom. I mean, let's say this. It's not an exclusively modern critique to say that the founders were writing eloquently about freedom while we enslaved millions.
Right.
We act as if that's us looking backwards, like that's some sort of CRT viewpoint of the modern mind. Go back and read the history books. There were many, even. And people like, again, Alexander Hamilton and John Jay. John Jay was an abolitionist.
He saw the cognitive dissonance in the moment.
He's the governor of New York.
Yeah.
And he's the Supreme Court Chief Justice before that. Like, they were saying, this doesn't make sense. Now, whether or not they did enough to change it, I can't speak to that. But to act as if the thought wasn't present, that there is at least dissonance between freedom proclaimed and the way that freedom is being treated among certain people groups. And it's not even get into how Native Americans were treated. That's a whole nother thing.
Right.
But it was there. So it's not a – it's a why can we say that today? Because the humility remains that, I don't need this to be a perfect system. I don't need this to be a perfect country. I don't need this to be a perfect constitution. I don't need the founders to be perfect. None of them considered that. That's what they were getting away from. It was the king who – proclaimed himself
unquestioned authority, whatever,
to be perfect. They were getting away from that. The real spirit, the revolutionary spirit of America, is found in not ascribing sacred attributes to non-sacred things. That is the very spirit of it. So, wow,
you need to write that book, John.
I think I just did, Johnny.
It's called Democratic Savants.
There's a lot of that in Not So Black and White, which you know you can pre-order right now.
Not So Black and White dot.
Not So Black and White book. If you do NotSoBlackAndWhite.com, it will take you to a site, and it's not ours.
Okay.
But if you want to pre-order the book, you can start reading right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's a sample chapter on there. And people are going, and there's a video on there, a promo video.
I'm
going
to do it.
Go check it out.
Well, man. I can get the copy now. You have the books for me.
You have the inside track.
And maybe patrons?
All the patrons are going to have an inside track.
Oh, that's good.
Now that I have books in the next few weeks.
Go to TalkAboutThatPodcast.com. Or you can become a patron.
Yeah. If you would like to get a free copy of that, go ahead and, well, I say free. I need you to become a patron.
What's that do for me, though? We need to put the link for my zany show up on the Not Talk About That podcast.
And that is coming up on October
17th.
The 17th.
Yeah. Tickets on sale now.
Which, you know, I'm going to be in New York that week.
John.
And I'm going to be home for your show.
Are you coming home for it?
I'm coming home for that show.
No, you're not.
I am.
That's so nice.
Like, they asked me to be on a major television show, and I said, no, my buddy Johnny is headlining Zanies. And they were like, what's
Zanies? They're rebooting
Zanies?
Charles in Charge.
And they wanted me to play, be the lead.
They wanted you to be Buddy Limbeck. Why do I know that that's the neighbor, friend?
You are a fountain of worthless
knowledge.
I'm a
democratic savant is what I am. I'm the worst kind of savant. I remember the dumbest stuff.
You do have quite the mind for
any
useless
80s television show, I can tell you. I can almost sing every theme song.
Yeah.
I know, like, producers' names.
Do you?
Anything that, like, ticked on the, you know, the credits.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's so weird.
You know what weird, like, photographic memory thing I have in my head? I have watching commercials as a kid between my favorite shows when they came on with, like, Time Life.
Yes.
Old school music.
Yes.
Yeah. And I don't know.
The songs in order.
Yeah, but
the clips of songs.
I know the clips.
Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, I remember, it still happens to me. Mm-hmm. I'll be listening to an old song from the 70s, and when it gets to the line that was in the Time Life thing,
yep,
I'll expect it to go to the next clip of a song. Because you remembered it in those orders.
I remember Baby Love, Baby Love, my Baby Love. And I remember it going to, I can't remember what was next, but like, it comes out of songs that, yeah, it's crazy.
Isn't that weird? It like rewired our brains.
Well, it was a formative time, Johnny.
It was, and now that's just like not a thing. How do people access new music now? Because like people don't really listen to terrestrial radio as much. They're just Spotifying.
My daughter
suggestions.
Somehow comes.
The algorithm tells you what's next.
I think
if
right,
you liked Ariana Grande, you'll love, and they just push it
it's
into
very
your
word of mouth. She likes music when she hears other kids, like in the volleyball team, listen to music, and then she adds it to her playlist, and she and I listen to her music. Every morning, usually going to school, we listen to her music. And we'll go to Hendersonville quite a bit, which is a long drive to play club ball. And we love that drive. And when Christmas comes, we listen to a lot of Christmas music.
She likes Christmas music?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I just don't care for it.
Are you serious?
We've had this conversation about
it. But I forgot about it. I'm offended all over again, as if.
It's just, it's hard to play, I think, as a musician. It irritates me because it's just every
it
chord, every
hard
word is a chord. It's very bouncy.
So I will say this to your point about that kind of Christmas music.
Yeah.
Tomorrow I'm recording an interview on a podcast called Dadville.
Oh, right.
With Dave Barnes.
Great
and
podcast.
John McLaughlin. Yeah. And I'll let you guys know.
Very
when
popular
when it
podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. Dadville, Dave Barnes. He's a Nashville guy. Amazing musician.
Wrote God Gave Me You.
Yep. Wrote God Gave Me You. But I'm going to get to tell him tomorrow in the interview that his Christmas album, his first Christmas album, is my number one Christmas album. And it's a whole lot of original songs, but he redoes a lot of old ones. Like, it's the kind of, like, I don't do a lot of dancing.
Okay.
But it's the kind of album that every Christmas, and I'll start playing it.
You get out your dancing shoes.
Like, I will grab my wife, and we will stand in front of the Christmas tree, and I'll dance to that record.
Wow.
So, that, and I don't dance. So, yeah, let that sink in. So, yeah. But you got to have my point. You got to have the right kind of Christmas music.
Okay.
What are you doing? Like, are you?
I need like Michael Bublé.
You need Dave Barnes.
Something with some.
Yeah, he's got to put a little something, a little pizzazz on it, Johnny.
All right.
A little pizzazz.
I'll try.
So,
I want to get into the Christmas spirit. You know, this year.
Do you want to know what we've done to do that?
Last year, Christmas was kind of a bummer. We were in the throes of it. Of course, we're really probably not going to be out of it this year either. But like. I was just like, Christmas is a bummer now because I can't do my normal. You know, I think we're feeling less sorry for ourselves now, hopefully, but who knows?
You're not going to believe this.
What are you doing?
There's already a Christmas tree up in my house.
No, there's not.
There is.
John.
And it is a fall tree.
And then you just take down the...
She has made... My house is an amazing place to live right now because, Johnny, the holiday spirit has already begun. It's just in a... It smells like... It smells like pumpkin spice in the house. She's got fall. She decorates for fall. We have
but
this,
a fall Christmas tree?
It's a thing. So, well, the deal was our Christmas
it's
tree.
It's a thing if you make it because you're a lunatic.
Our Christmas tree last year messed up the automatic lights and stuff. And so we got rid of it. And we realized heading here into late summer, it was like, wow, we have to order a tree or suddenly you're going to be able to find one.
Yeah.
And so we found a deal, ordered a tree. Well, I don't want to take it up and put it in the attic.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Just to take it out in a few months.
Right.
So, dude, she has decorated the most.
You mean 11 months?
I need to send you. It's not 11 months from now.
I'm saying, like,
Christmas.
When you put it up in January, you have 11 months before you can.
I didn't put it up in January.
No, I'm saying when you you're saying, like, I don't want to take the tree down just to put it up in a few months, but it really should only be up about a month of the year.
Listen, you don't tell me what to do. Like, that's the thing. You're not the boss of me.
I'm not.
And right now, my house is an amazing place to be. In fact, I'm turning on Dave Barnes and dancing with my wife tonight around the fall Christmas tree. Well, the fall
tree.
Does he
have a fall record?
Well, he just put a new record out, actually, a little EP. It's really good. Do you listen to Dave Barnes?
I do. I like Dave Barnes a lot. He's kind of enragingly talented.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys that has a success at everything he does. Yeah. And he's very funny, too.
Oh.
He's kind of deep as well.
Yeah.
And it offends me on a personal level. You know, you see somebody who's kind of achieved a level of, like, humanity.
Yeah.
And you're like, so it's out there. It can happen.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he would be like, you don't know. I got a lot of cracks
no,
in the veneer.
No, actually, he's a total arrogant jerk. That's what's crazy.
Well, you can find out and let us all know.
No, his podcast is great. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. It reminds me a lot to talk about that.
So you're saying you're cheating on me. You're going to go to another more successful podcast.
If he makes an offer...
Oh, wow.
For me to join them, it'd be weird because they don't know me.
Yeah, and you don't have any leverage or fame that you're bringing
to. None at all. I had nothing.
No clout is coming with you.
There's a good chance I won't string together coherent sentences tomorrow in this interview that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to be a little more fun.
I think coherent and make sense are the same thing, so you're already failing.
Wow. I'm already saying too much, and it's adding nothing. So,
Department of Redundancy Department.
And then on Friday, I'm recording for a podcast, one of the first podcasts I listened to, honestly, of all podcasts. Like, it's been on a long time when I forgot it. That's Typology Ian Cron.
Enneagram podcast.
And that's just me solo on Friday. So we're going to talk about me writing and the Endoriagram. Mm-hmm. We'll probably talk about Not So Black and White some too, but that's going to be pretty, pretty cool to be on one of the first podcasts you ever listen to.
I still think those podcasts need a skeptic like me to be like fun and skeptical about the Enneagram.
I have had Enneagram podcasters say they would like to have a comedian on.
But they're imagining like a famous comedian.
Right. I don't know if
they're not imagining like,
no,
hey,
I think
could
you're
you
perfect.
Find somebody who's just funny, but they're not known at all? Oh, I've got just the guy.
I think.
Do I ever.
You know, Johnny, you're famous here, buddy. You know what Mark Batterson used to say is he wants to be most famous in his own house.
I've never heard of that guy.
And
so
that's true.
Your point is already
moved.
You're
very famous. Listen, man.
You know, people say it's a mute point.
Yes, I know people, and I try really hard not to correct them on that because I've made plenty of mistakes. Doggy Dog World, I used to say that. You know what I'm saying? Or up an atom with an atom.
With like an
I didn't know that.
ADAM.
You corrected all those things in Community, and now
and on the air.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't want to make fun of someone for saying a mute point, but it is a moot point.
Yeah.
It's a moot point to correct them saying mute point.
Yeah, because they're not going to be correctable because it's too late. It's already like, it's a template in their brain. It's already, they've decided.
Yeah.
Once you've been saying mute point that long.
And in your mind, it makes sense.
Yeah, because it's like it's been silenced.
Right.
The point has no merit.
Has not been heard.
Yeah.
But that's not what that means.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Moot.
I like the word moot.
Yeah. Well, what's the song? But the point is probably moot. I want to tell her that I love her, but the Rick Springfield.
What did he rhyme it with?
Jesse's Girl. He says
I'm thinking very
something acting
school.
Cute. Oh, I want to tell her that I love her, but the point is probably moot. It's like Rick Springfield had like a calendar of the day, a word of the day calendar, and he was just like, all right, moot.
I got to throw moot in here. But he rhymed it with cute.
He rhymed it with cute.
Which is not a rhyme.
Cute, moot.
Cute and moot. No.
It's close enough.
Cute
for
and mute.
For rock and roll, it's close enough.
Oh, my gosh. You always make excuses for Rick Springfield.
I'm sorry. It's true. If he was going to say mute point, that would have been the time to do it. Point is probably mute.
You know, listener, we hope that it's not been a moot endeavor that you've listened to this podcast.
We hope you've not muted us either.
Yeah, either one. We appreciate the time that you give us every week. And seriously, we want you to go buy some tickets and go watch Johnny at Zany's on October the 17th.
I'm bringing all my jokes, guys, and silly songs. And actually, there's a special guest that I have tentatively confirmed. And if it happens, it's going to be something a lot of fun that you want to be there for.
Man, I love it. There's a lot of big teasing happening on the show right now.
Yeah, it's too much, probably.
No, it's good.
Feels like a radio show.
Yeah, everybody's
we
like,
come
hey.
Back from the break. something under your cabinet that can kill your children. And you're like, what in the world? Tell me now. No, no, no. First, this word from Mentos.
Mentos, the fresh maker. Hey, but you should check out our website, though.
Talkaboutthatpodcast.com. We've said this before.
We have, but we're
Patreon.
Oh, yeah. Well, you think we just stop books. Saying it now? What if this is a new listener?
This feels...
do we have to keep saying the same thing
every
time?
We're just browbeating these poor people.
Yeah.
Just support us.
Yeah, just go and check it out, man. And
it's free. This show is free.
Word of mouth, Johnny, is the best advertisement.
It is.
Except for sponsors and commercial outlets. But besides that, word of mouth is the best. So make sure you guys...
do the third best thing that you could do.
Tell your friends about
it. Just listen and tell people.
And a good review really helps as well.
It does. The algorithm's they keep changing it on us. And
we don't know what it is.
These computers don't know.
I couldn't spell algorithm if I had to.
No.
I mean, I'm pretty good at spelling.
But go there, and if you put a comment and a review, then the algorithm goes, oh, people are engaging with this. And then they slowly spread it to more people, like a plague.
Or just talk in front of Alexa. Like, hey, talk about that a 5-star review. Yeah. And then when you open your computer, it's going to be open.
It'll already have pre-written
like, John and Johnny are so funny or whatever. And you're like, oh, my gosh.
It's a sample, like a template.
Sorry, Johnny and John are so funny.
Thank you.
That one would offend you probably.
Yeah.
So what did you say that someone said we were meaty and you were like, all I hear is not funny.
Yeah. I love the topics. They're so meaty. Like, all right,
oh my goodness!
Chew on it.
Ron and John talk too much.
Somebody said they didn't like ham because it felt like it got bigger as you chewed on it. Like it grows in your mouth when you try to eat ham. You can't ever really finish the ham.
Oh.
And I hadn't really thought about that, but ham is one of the more like bubblegum kind of meats. It's a very, you know, it doesn't like melt in your mouth.
Like a ham that you cut off of a ham, yes, but like deli meat ham.
Yeah, if it's sliced
thin. Disagree.
Yes, yeah. But like if you just eat a big chunk of ham at Thanksgiving dinner, you're like, oof.
Ooh.
It won't go away.
Do people serve cold ham at your Thanksgiving dinners?
I'm a hot ham guy.
I'm a hot ham guy too, and I don't understand the cold ham, but it's a thing.
We need to have a special Thanksgiving episode where we eat Thanksgiving dinner and share our Thanksgiving opinions, strong opinions.
Because
it could feel like Thanksgiving dinner with your Uncle Hal who says you're going to hell for your earring or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, except we're just sharing opinions that don't really matter.
I think people would love to hear more of our strong opinions that don't matter.
While we also smacking our lips and eating ham.
In all seriousness, we are working on a possible live episode for our 200.
Yeah, we want to kind of find out if people would come to a live recording of the podcast. So we'll have some polling data going out about that soon. But if you know for sure that you would 100%
send us a message.
Travel to be here for that, send us a message. Let us know if that's something that interests you.
Yeah, you can get our email there at the website, talkaboutthatpodcast.com.
Send us an email. Let us know, hey, I would totally be in for that. Because we're thinking maybe around the 200th episode would be a good spot for that. Yeah,
this is 177, I think. So we got about, you know.
We got a while. For you
20 more weeks.
To plan and plot.
Yeah.
But for you to start scheduling those vacation days.
Yeah, yeah.
Sure, you could go to Florida or Cancun. No.
Come to Nashville, man.
Come to Nashville. And come sit in a room with how many ever other people and listen to this.
Listen to this. So yeah, let us know for real if you're interested.
Yeah.
And if we have enough people, we may think about doing that. If not, we'll just stop talking
about
it.
We'll pretend that we never asked.
Right.
Yeah. We'll erase this from the database.
That's what we do, guys. We avoid the hard things. So anyway, hey, thank you for not avoiding the podcast today, though. We'll see you next week and talk about that.
In a world where relationships are easily broken and often discarded, the Rebuilding Us Marriage podcast is your lighthouse, guiding the way to hope, restoration, and transformation in Christ. I'm your host and marriage coach, Dana Shea. Join me as we discuss the necessary tools for rebuilding marriages from adversity, betrayal, and disconnection. It's time to reignite love as we rebuild marriages from the ground up. Listen to the Rebuilding Us Marriage podcast on lifeaudio.com or wherever you get your podcasts.